Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you for joining me again today as we wander through these unprecedented times that we are in at the moment. I'm glad to be able to bring you new episodes still. And guess it's getting hard to match up schedules with things changing day to day, but we are doing it. And I hope that you're out there doing fine as well and staying safe. Over the years doing this podcast, I've had the pleasure of interviewing people growing businesses in almost every market imaginable. Trampoline parks to peanut butter, if we think recently, and from the farthest reaches of the world, from Ukraine to South Africa to Canada, to wherever else you want to take it. But despite all of these differences, they've all shared a commonality that today's guest does not share. That is that they had the ability to move their body. My guest today is a brilliant writer and entrepreneur who can't move anything but his face. This is not a joke. The only part of his body he can move are his eyes and his lips. His hands, feet, arms, and legs are almost totally paralyzed, only managing, as he says, the occasional twitch and nothing more. And yet, he's created an amazing life for himself. Using speech recognition technology, he's written articles read by more than 5 million people. He's also built several blogs that have made him millions of dollars. Now, let's hack John Morrow. Now, just before we get into the interview, I just want to tell you about our sponsor, FreshBooks. If you are starting a business, if you're running a business, or if you are now moving into freelancing, you want to know how to get paid faster. We all do. So why not make things a little easier on yourself? Well, you can now because FreshBooks have the solution. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is designed specifically for small business owners. It's simple, it's intuitive, and it keeps you way more organized than that crumpled box of receipts that you might have otherwise. You can create and send professional-looking invoices in 30 seconds, and you'll get paid twice as fast with automated online payments. File expenses even quicker and keep them perfectly organized for tax time. And the best part, Facebooks will grow alongside your business. So you'll have the tools you need when you need them without ever having to learn the ins and outs of accounting. Join the 24 million people who have used FreshBooks and try it for free for 30 days. No catch and no credit card required. Go to freshbooks.com/hack and enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section to get started. And we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Oh. You have no idea how much of a pleasure this is. You're somebody, I'm just over 5 years, I think, at this show, approaching 500 episodes. And you've been on my list for a long time. So I'm really, really happy about this. But with that said, John, how about we just jump into it?
Sure, let's do it.
John, you are a blogger very much, and you are, I'm going to say, a man who wears many hats. But right now, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
The first thing that comes to mind is writing. But maybe not for the reason that most people would think. I mean, writing is an important skill set. But for me, writing is that one thing where I feel like I'm truly world class. And figuring that out fairly early on was a huge benefit to me because I was able to write things that spread to millions of people around the world. And that allowed me to connect with just so many people that have been helpful to me in so many ways, I think it's like the beginning of the chain, so to speak, that led to so many amazing things down the road.
Things that you wouldn't have expected writing would take you to.
Yeah, I mean, it's led me to, I mean, this interview. It's led me to relationships with incredible influencers and thinkers and other writers all over the world. I mean, for example, one of my favorite books is Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It by Kamal Ravikant. And I'd read the book several times, and one day a friend introduced me to Kamal, and then a month later, we were writing partners for a while.
Wow.
And I mean, that kind of thing happens on a regular basis now, and you can trace it back. Kamal read a post and still remembered a post that I wrote 8 or 9 years ago. And I think that's why it's important to, A, find what you're good at and do it, but also to create content, because you never know who that's going to lead you to.
Absolutely. I fully agree. I've been introduced to people that I would never have expected, and I'm nowhere near world class. But this idea, John, like of you knowing that you are a world class writer and knowing that that's your one thing, you said you like figured this out early on. Like, what were you doing that brought you to like, wow, I can do this better than most?
I mean, it started all the way back in when I was a child. I started reading when I was like 3 years old. I started writing when I was 5 years old. I was literally writing like superhero stories when I was five. I still have notebooks full of those. They're not very good. They're definitely written by a five-year-old. But even to have a five-year-old writing full stories is unusual. So I always knew I was good. English and writing was always really easy for me. That it was so easy, like I always made A's in English all the way from first grade to graduating high school. And the principal allowed me to double up on junior and senior English and take both in the same semester so that I was able to graduate early. So yeah, I mean, I found out really early on. But what I didn't figure out until later was blogging, because I mean, when I was a kid, blogging didn't exist. But I was really lucky to start blogging, I don't know, 2006, fairly early on in the process. And then to quickly get introduced to some major people that were fabulous mentors. Brian Clark from Copyblogger, Neil Patel. So I worked with both of those guys. I worked for Copyblogger full-time for 3 or 4 years and really learned about the blogging craft. And because of that, and because of the honor and the weight that they put on really being good at your craft. So like when I first went to work at Copyblogger, for instance, Brian told me, okay, I want you to write 100 headlines a day and send them to me. And I said, okay, will do. And 30 days later, I went back to him with 3,000 headlines. And I said, so what do you want me to do with these? And he said, John, you're the first person I've ever told that to who actually did it. And I learned so much from it that I continued that for my first full year at Copyblogger. So in a year, I wrote over 36,000 headlines. And people ask me now, how did you get so good at writing these headlines? My first year, I wrote 36,000 of them. And to be put into a world where I was surrounded by some of the other best writers on the web and best marketers in the world. And to grow up and be nurtured in that environment where that kind of thing wasn't too terribly unusual and to where it was appreciated allowed me to take my natural love for writing and turn it into a specialty of being able to write things that get tons and tons of traffic. And that's something I'll always be grateful for.
So looking back, I'm just going to go on a limb. I'm making an assumption here, but I'm assuming that you and I can both say that writing 36,000 headlines in a year because Brian Clark off the cuff tells you you should write 100 a day is kind of bonkers. I want to know, John, like, because like the way he said, like he's told many people this and it's just sort of in passing, those people weren't just like, all right, well, that's what I'm doing because it's kind of a bonkers amount of headlines. Let's just say that. What, like, did you consciously think like, oh, I actually should do that? Or was it just like, obviously this is what I'm doing?
I mean, I thought my boss was giving me an assignment and I was like, yes, sir, will do. And it took me, I don't know, 1 to 2 hours a day, probably more like 2 hours a day to do those 100 headlines. And not all of those headlines were very good. That wasn't a requirement, right? Mm-hmm. So out of those 100, maybe 5 were worth thinking about. But I thought it was just a normal part of my job. And what I didn't realize was that, like, nobody really expected me to do it. Maybe that was me, just obsessive things like that for so long.
Really? Like consciously at that time, did you ever have in your mind, like, this is the path to mastery?
No.
How long after writing 36? Sorry, I have to stick to this because this is phenomenal. After that, though, you must have realized what it did for your ability to write. Just because that's more headlines than most people will ever. It's like there's some companies, like probably the whole rest of the team of Copy Blogger haven't written that many headlines. Was this something you realized, like, wow, what if I just do that now with intros? Or what if I do that with, like, you know what I mean? Like, was there something else? And you just like, I'm going to actually just keep implementing this without being told by my boss.
Yeah. By the end of the 30 days, I realized how much I had learned. And I think at that point, I had the inkling that something could come of it. And I mean, the other thing that I didn't say is that I continued to do that kind of thing going forward. So even after that year, my next commitment was writing 2,000 words a day, every day, 7 days a week. And I successfully did that every day for 2 years straight.
Wow.
Even Christmas morning, I woke up, I wrote my 2,000 words before I opened my gifts. I got in a car accident. I was in the hospital. I asked them to bring my laptop to the hospital so that I could write my 2,000 words with my laptop sitting on casts with broken legs. That's how serious I was. And I mean, because of that, and you're right, I mean, it probably is more than the entire staff at Copy Blogger has written. I don't know, Brian is pretty obsessive too about things like that. But when I left, I was the most popular writer on the site by a huge margin. And some of that was talent, but a large part of it was just work. It was just putting in way more work on a more consistent basis than maybe any other writer in the world at the time. And it made me really good and really popular.
2,000 words a day, 7 days a week for 2 years. Were you publishing all of this or just writing?
Just writing. I probably published only about 10% of it.
Wow.
And I mean, people go back and read. And I mean, I'll be straight up. I was a better writer then than I am now. Because I don't write 2,000 words a day anymore. Now I'm the CEO of a company. I'm still a really good writer. But am I as good? as I was then? No, I wasn't, just because I was the equivalent of an athlete running miles every day. My writing brain was in tip-top shape. Where now I'm like a guy who used to be a world-class runner and is kind of fat, but could still probably run pretty well if he tried to.
Can run better than most still.
Yeah. So yeah, but back then, and that's when I wrote articles that like broke the internet that got shared so much. We're talking millions and millions and millions of visitors. And also created a lot of lifelong fans. When we look at our customer base, now it's SmartBlogger, and we talk to them and we ask those people, what led you to us? At least a third of the time, it was something I wrote 8 or 9 years ago. It was one of those hugely viral posts that not only did they read it, but they remembered it and they wanted more. And that's what brought them to us. So yeah, I mean, it's just hugely impactful.
So 2011, 2012, you decide to leave CopyBlogger as associate editor and start, I believe it was Boost Blog Traffic and then SmartBlogger, but it is SmartBlogger now. But what was it, just the sheer volume of traffic that you could get? And were you just like, wait a minute, I've got this figured out. I need to do it myself.
Kind of. So at SmartBlogger, Brian Clark made the decision. He was deciding between Sonia Simone and I about who he wanted to run all of the content for SmartBlogger. And he chose Sonia. And it kind of left my position in question. Looking back, by the way, I mean, I was really, heartbroken at the time about that. Looking back, I think he made the right choice, just for the record. But it left me with a lot of questions. And then at the same time, I got an offer from Neil Patel to come help him launch the Kissmetrics blog, which, I mean, it doesn't exist now, but for years, I mean, it was over 1 million visitors a month. It was one of the biggest marketing blogs in the world. And during the first 60 or 90 days, I can't remember what we got it up to. It's like 100, 200,000 visitors a month in just the first 60 days. And I was just being paid a paycheck. I didn't own anything. And I trained the entire writing team, which many of those people stayed for years and made Neil millions of dollars. And I just remember at some point realizing, I've got to stop doing this for other people and do it for myself. So I did. That's when, Boost Blog Traffic was the name of the site originally. And it was a $9 domain name off of GoDaddy. And I launched the blog. But here's the thing in my story is, like, I launched this blog, but I'd already worked with the top people on the web and built tons of connections. And this was after I'd already been writing every day 2,000 words a day. So my skills were at their peak, at their sharpest. And I launched this blog, and 14,000 people signed up to the pre-launch list before I even wrote the first post. So I went into this, the first day of traffic was something like 7,000 visitors. With this huge launch at the time, it was the biggest blog launch in history. Later, I beat it by launching my other blog, Unstoppable, which has kind of become a passion project that I don't work on very much and probably should. That blog got 500,000 visitors in the first month, something like that. But yeah, I finally launched it myself. And that's when I started to make the transition from writer to entrepreneur and to stop thinking of myself as just this, you know, creative guy who sits by the beach and writes stuff, to building a team and creating products. And that's where I made a big transition.
I was one of those first 14,000 people.
Were
happy
you?
To say.
Awesome.
I totally remember that, the transition from copy blogger to there. And at this point, like, you realize the skills you had and that you didn't want to just get the paycheck. You wanted ownership of it. And like, you made this transition to entrepreneur, but somewhere along there, you must have, like, knowing how to write, knowing how to run the writing team even and scale that is different than monetizing it, right? And creating products. Did you feel like, were you kind of freaked out about that part of it? Or were you just like, I think I've seen this done enough, I can do it?
I learned a lot from Brian about creating information products. I'd seen successes and failures at Copyblogger and had learned from those. But I will say I was overconfident about creating products. I don't feel like I've really mastered that process until maybe 2 years ago. So this is a long time. Where now I feel like I genuinely, after 10 years of doing it, like, really understand it. At the time, I thought it was easy as just ask people what they want and then sell it to them. Unfortunately, I mean, even though that sounds really elegant and simple, it's not that simple. Sometimes people tell you they want something that they're not actually willing to spend money on. And I had to go through a few product failures and learn that the hard way. But yeah, no, it was a huge learning curve. And the biggest learning curve for me was how to hire and manage a full team of people and to actually step up into the role of being like the boss in all capital letters. It was almost like growing up. And that was probably the hardest transition I've ever made. And I feel like I've really stepped into that just over the past 4 years. And I don't think anyone ever masters being the CEO. But I don't even think I was passable until maybe 2 or 3 years ago. So that transition lasted a long time and continues to go on today.
To back up just a tiny bit, this 2 years ago, figuring out how to create products, the whole asking people, you're right, it sounds elegant, it sounds simple. We hear it all the time. You're right, it doesn't always work because people can say anything until they take out their credit card. Is what you figured out simple and elegant, or is it just more convoluted than that?
It actually is simple, but it's harder to think about. It's one of these weird concepts that our brain doesn't naturally understand. And that's the whole jobs to be done framework. So the idea that people hire products to perform certain jobs. And what I mean by that is, I mean, just for example, when are chocolate and flowers direct competitors?
Valentine's Day.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wait, I've read the show. I really love this.
So yeah, I mean, so this was originally what, Clayton Christensen? Is that his name? Or was it someone else? I can't remember where I first read about it. Since then, it's been popularized in product management in the software industry. But the idea that things that don't seem to have anything to do with each other, like chocolate and flowers, actually can be direct competitors because they're being quote-unquote hired to be a gift, right? it wasn't until I started asking the question, number one, who am I writing to? And number two, what products are they already hiring? What products and services are they spending money on? And starting to follow the money trail of people's actual buying patterns, and then map that back to things I might be able to create to fulfill those same jobs in a better way. That's when I really started to create Blockbuster products. So when I did that.
I love it. It is about fulfilling the same job. It's not like, I know, because a lot of people, when we're starting, it's like, well, I want to just solve something around that for that person because that's already been solved. And it's like, well, has it though?
Yeah. I mean, a good example, there are tons of examples, and here's the hardest thing to wrap your mind around. The jobs to be done don't really change over hundreds of years. The job to be done for the basic job to be done for a horse and a car is the same thing. Move people from point A to point B quickly. It's the same thing. And so really the evolution of commerce is entrepreneurs like you and me coming up with new ways to fulfill the same old jobs in a better way. And sometimes, the reason why I said basic job, nowadays cars have other jobs like making me feel superior to my neighbor because I have a more expensive car, or fulfilling my identity as a creative person because I have an iPhone, right? Looking at those jobs to be done, where in the past, that same job to be done might have been fulfilled by a particular way of dressing or something. It's difficult to map and realize that an iPhone competes with a fedora hat or something, right? But it does. And to really dial into those and then look at the money. So our biggest product right now, which has enormous potential, and I'm really excited about it, is we started the content marketing certification program that was a direct result of this process. Okay. Because I followed the money and realized that the content marketing industry is a $412 billion market. It's bigger, like three times bigger than the newspaper and magazine industries combined. Okay? All the newspapers and magazines in the world combined are still three times smaller than the content marketing industry in the terms of actual money being spent. Okay? And when I looked at that, so businesses are hiring writers. There were something like 13,000 unfilled full-time writing jobs to create content that businesses couldn't fill because they literally couldn't find anybody qualified. Okay. So then I started to look at it from the other side. Well, how are these people being trained? They're not. Where do writers go to look for work? They go to look for work in places like the writer's market and online writing job boards, which do not have these job listings from the $412 billion market. So we create the training program to train the writers on how to be really good, highly skilled content marketers. And nearly every single graduate gets hired within 60 days of passing the exam. Because the demand is just epic. It's just so hot. And the pay, writers are astounded by this. Writers are getting paid more than they were in the heyday of journalism. Mm-hmm. Content marketing is a six-figure job. What they don't realize is that the job to be done is no longer writing for a print newspaper that gets delivered to people's doors, the literal job to be done. It's writing for a company that wants to rank in the search engines for a keyword. So understanding those jobs to be done in your market and watching the flow of money, I created a product that entered into a $412 billion market in a point of transition. And because of that, I have no idea. It could potentially be a $100 million product by the time it's all over. And where did the idea come from? I just watched the money and I mapped out the jobs to be done. That's it.
I'm on SmartBlogger right now. Under products, I can see content marketing certification. If I click on a button, it takes me to one simple page where I can buy it. Strategically or tactically, I believe strategically, you as the CEO, as the person who set records for launching blogs, you don't seem to follow the launch it and close it model, the launch it and close it model, because I can buy it right now. Strategically, what's your reasoning behind this?
So, I will go ahead and tell you straight up. No one is supposed to buy it that way. I actually deliberately discourage people from buying that way, because if you follow that link, that takes you to a price of $2,000, I believe.
It does, yes.
Okay. Inside our email list, every time we open that course, which it actually opens, we have a very sophisticated, very complicated rolling launch model to where literally it gets tied to your email address and your IP address, and it opens and closes for each and every member of our email list on schedule at different times.
Wow.
And that's a very technically complicated thing to do. It also works amazingly well. But 98% of our sales are selling it for $1,000, not $2,000. So the entire purpose of that product page is to anchor the $2,000 price and to make the 50% discount on the tuition real when it's marketed in an automated fashion.
Wow. And because it doesn't seem like you're not one of those people that I see around where even on the site where some people their pitch for getting onto their email list is just because you'll get a discount. Don't buy it.
Nope. What we have, so we have pretty sophisticated pop-up strategy to on our site. By the way, anyone listening, you want to know the most valuable part of your website? It's not actually a website, it's the pop-up on your website. The thing that annoys you the most is the most valuable part of your website. If you don't have a pop-up, you're losing so much money, it just should make you cry. But the pop-up strategy we have offers free classes, free webinars, free reports. So like our blogging product, we have a report, the 37 best niches right now that beginning bloggers are still succeeding in. That gets a crazy good opt-in rate. And that puts you into a funnel with an automated open and close cycle. And you get the discount only for a specific period. And it's real scarcity, because if they don't take advantage of it, it literally closes them off from having the discount. They can't get it.
It never comes around again?
It does come around again. In our whole machine, it's all automated for the most part. And it's very complicated. And I have a full-time person who I pay a lot of money, who their only job is to manage that machine. They're marketing automation specialists. That's all they do. All day, every day. but it's tremendously profitable to the tune of millions.
So the pop-up is the most valuable part because that is the starting point of the funnel.
It is. And so curious, and I'm not, this is not a matter of opinion, by the way, it's a matter of mathematics. So if you do not collect someone's email address and you have great content, 95% of people who say they will return, if you survey them, say, I will be back. Out of all of those people, 95% of people will never return in their lifetime. Of the people who say they're coming back. Okay? So what that means is, if you don't collect someone's email address or find some way of following up with them, these days it's not the only way, thankfully, but if you don't get their email address, there's a 95% chance that you will never see them again. And that's assuming they like what they saw. Okay? So all of your traffic, any visitor to your website who does not turn into an email subscriber so that you can follow up with them over time, might as well have never been there. That traffic is almost totally worthless. Okay? So in reality, I mean, I got to be known as the traffic guy, 200 million visitors, all of this stuff. Traffic is a vanity metric. It doesn't matter. What matters, you can directly track the revenue of a company in proportion to its email list. The correlation is insane. With blogs, a rule of thumb is, for a sophisticated marketer, is a dollar per email subscriber per month. So if you have no subscribers and you're not making any money, that's why. If you have 1,000 subscribers, you'll probably make about $1,000 a month if you do your marketing correctly. If you have 100,000 subscribers, you'll probably make $100,000 a month. And it's amazing how well this tracks across industries. Now, when you get really amazing marketers, you can see $2 per subscriber, $3 per subscriber. That's very rare. But it does happen. And those are the most valuable sites out there. That's how I look at things. So I can directly predict our revenue based on the number of new subscribers coming in. It's a perfect correlation.
That's crazy. As long as you're, I mean, I've heard the $1 thing and it makes me really sad because I know how many subscribers I have and I know how much money I make from that list. It's not a dollar.
That means you need to work on your email marketing.
I know. For sure. I know. When you started analyzing this, were you at a dollar?
Early on, yeah, I probably was. If not above it. I mean, keep in mind the pedigree I have and the type of people I've hung around from the beginning of my career. I was surrounded by some of the people who are literally the best in the world at monetizing traffic. Mm-hmm. And because of that, yeah, I was able to do it pretty early.
So now, as the CEO, how, like, there's the traffic side of it, like the writing, there's the product side of it, and then there's, I guess, the marketing side with, like, the email and the automations. How closely tied to each of these things are you?
These days, so we have a team of 13 full-time people. These days, I'm most involved with the strategy behind the marketing and products. I still write some of the high-value copy. So the sales pages, emails for things that are really important. That's the role I'm probably going to get out of next. Though, that's probably going to be a hire pretty soon. But I think my ongoing role is mostly strategic at this point on both sides. But I'd say if I had to say which one spend more time on, probably 2/3 marketing, 1/3 product.
How are you determining, like, what is that metric sort of that tells you that that's probably where I have to pull it up next?
So one of the things I do, and I mean, even to this day, I continue to have a coach. My coach is Alex Sharfin. He's amazing. has an amazing podcast for anyone who hasn't heard it. And I get nothing for saying that. And what Alex has taught me to do is every quarter I do a time study where I write down everything I'm doing all day long, and it's miserable and I hate it. And at the end of the day, I go back and label everything strategic or tactical. And if you're growing as a company and growing as a CEO, the amount of tactical work you're doing goes down over time. Strategic goes up. And right now, copywriting is the most tactical time I'm doing based on my actual time studies. And so that's the next hire. It's not even really a matter of opinion. That's just the next one.
Wow, it's so simple. Tactical or strategic, slowly pull out of the tactical as you grow.
Yeah, as you can afford to. And you know, the reason why it's one of the last things, it's one of the highest paid things to hire. A really, really good copywriter who can do what I do and make six figures. So it makes sense that it's one of the last roles. But that's what I've gradually done ever since I started working with Alex. And really, I was doing it before then. I just didn't really realize what I was doing. But yeah, it's a very simple framework to determine who you should hire next. Never make a hiring. It's one of Alex's things. Never make a hiring decision until you have a time study that tells you you should make it. And the same is true for managers in my company. In general, we don't hire anyone in any product until any department until the time study justifies it.
And do you still enjoy the copywriting aspect of it too?
Yes, I do. But if you look at the levels of enjoyment, I enjoy almost everything about my job these days. But I'd say copywriting is, even though I'm really, really good at it, I'm a world-class copywriter, it's still probably 6 out of 10. And one of the things I've noticed over time is that I enjoy the things the most that are the things that I do that no one else can do and that create immense impact for people. And for every influencer, it's a common list of things. There are certain things that I do, and I want to get back to doing some more of those. Like, I'm not writing nearly as much as I used to. I think the company would grow faster if I did, because you cannot hire a writer as good as me. It's just not possible. So, and the writing I create, we've seen creates lifelong fans, people that follow us for decades. So it makes sense for me to do more of that. The same is also true of speaking engagements, creating products. There are certain things I bring that are just uniquely me. And I think that's true for anyone who would call themselves an influencer. A big part of it is just the way you think. And people grow to love that. And it becomes irreplaceable and hugely impactful at the same time.
Does this tie back to about 10 minutes ago, you mentioned Unstoppable and how it's kind of taken a sideline and it's just sort of a hobby passion project now, but how you said you probably should work on it more. Would you like to pull yourself away from this some and then focus over there and see what you can do with it?
The most likely path forward over the next decade for my company is having multiple blogs. And Unstoppable is probably the next one. The one where I have the best roots. It's also the self-improvement market is the biggest market in terms of traffic. There's more traffic around self-improvement topics than any other blogging topic by a huge margin. So it's kind of like the next bigger pond to go dominate. And I have the skills to go do it. So yeah, it is next. I've been saying that for a couple of years. And part of it is an immense hesitancy and just being uncomfortable. Like abandoning, like not spending my time every day in the thing where I'm already winning all the time, and then having to grow personally to where I'm comfortable Man, all kinds of things. Tim Ferriss published an interesting post not long ago talking about, I think, 11 reasons why you don't want to be famous. And one of those reasons was that he had a member of his community that was very active for years, commenting, showed up to like reader events, things like that. And one day that reader sent him a video and he thanked him for, he said, you know, you've been hugely impactful on my life, Tim. And I really appreciate everything you've done. You don't know this, but it's helped me through some dark times. But I've decided after a long time that I don't want to live anymore. And so I recorded this video to say goodbye. And he turned off the video and he shot himself. The reality of being in the self-improvement space is that kind of thing happens. And you also get people, and Tim talks about this, people emailing in and saying, I'm going to kill myself unless I talk to Tim in the next 24 hours. The customer support desk gets emails like that. When I started Unstoppable, we received over 7,000 emails in the first month. And I'd say roughly 5 to 10% of them were of that variety. That was immensely disturbing and also made me realize the huge amount of responsibility. And if I had to be honest with myself and the rest of the world, it scared me. And I think that's why I haven't done it. But at some point, one of the things I also believe is the things that scare you are in many ways an indication of the things you most need to do. And that I needed to grow to a point to where I was ready to do that. And I think that time is very quickly approaching.
When the job to be done is to potentially talk somebody down off a ledge, the stakes get a lot higher, I guess.
And they do. And I mean, what you have to do, and Tim talks about this, it was an incredibly insightful and self-aware post that I would really commend him for. But you have to draw boundaries, too. Tim eventually had to realize for his own sanity, I can't get involved every time someone says they're going to kill themselves. It's just, I can't do it. It'll destroy me. And so he had to put in a blanket policy. Whenever anyone reaches out and says they're going to do that, they refer them to the suicide hotline. And that's it. If they say they're going to kill someone else, they call 911. That's it. And Tim never hears about it. And on the one hand, that seems callous. But on the other hand, it's taking a deliberate focus of deciding who your avatar is and what your job to be done is and where you're really going to focus. And if you're not focusing on suicidal people, which I don't think Tim is, then you have to turn a blind, you have to be cold to that. And that's also a very difficult thing to do, too. But after having gone through this for a decade, I would say in Tim's case, I think he made the right call. And I think for me, if I'd have to do the same thing, because if you're responding to every desperate person, a lot of times you can't help the people who you could really have the biggest impact on.
You're an expert and a professional at something. The professionals at certain things. I think it's best to delegate everybody to the experts, not to put it on you because that's not your job.
I would agree. And I'm not an expert on suicide. I mean, it's funny. I've been through an immense amount of tragedy and adversity and pain in my life. I've almost died. I've had pneumonia 16 times.
Oh, wow.
I've had hundreds of broken bones. I've been through extremely traumatic things in relationships. I've almost seen family members beat to death. Been through all different kinds of things. Weird thing is, I've never wanted to kill myself. Not ever. Not even in the most terrible times. I don't know what that feels like. And I'm not saying that makes me a better person. It doesn't. It's just whatever that is inside of me just doesn't exist. And because of that, I'm probably the least qualified person on the planet to help someone who feels that way.
So I was thinking that the reason you hadn't started this blog was just the timing, or you just weren't up for the challenge of writing that much again, but wow.
No, I mean, I think I probably lied to myself for a year or two and said that was true. But nowadays, 2 or 3 years go by, and you're a person who's making plenty of money and you have a successful company. You realize eventually, okay, this isn't really true. I'm telling myself lies here to feel better about what I'm doing. And I think growing as a human being, I mean, just take business aside, is starting to become more and more self-aware and be more and more honest with yourself. And that's one of those realizations. Over the last 2 years, I've gradually come to that realization. And also just kind of the other piece of it is developing a little bit of compassion for yourself. Do I regret not getting started sooner with Unstoppable? Actually, no, not really. Because I don't feel like I was ready at the time. And because of that, I feel like I need to be compassionate to where I was and try to grow into the person who is capable of doing that. So that's what I focused on.
I love it. I love it. Man, it's been a fascinating conversation, John. Let's just direct people over to Smart Blogger. It's all about the job to be done for a specific person or people. Can you just tell them who that person is and what that job is?
So for us, we help people who want to get paid to write. And the people who we have the most success with are people who are usually looking for a new career in a later stage of their life. So you're already working in a job, or maybe you're recently retired, and you're looking for something you can do that has a little bit more freedom and flexibility in it, to where you can work online, where you can be location independent. And we train those people to become world-class, literally best in the world content marketers. And they get hired like hotcakes. That's what we do.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Smartblogger.com is the site where you can learn all about this. You can go, if nothing else, go over there and check out these pop-ups that drive the entire business, apparently. And yeah, the products are over there, but now you also know the inside scoop on how to get the deal on the products if you are looking for that.
Yeah. If anyone wants to hire our writers too, and by the way, I get no money from this. We just direct the leads onto our writers. We have another site, writer.me, that businesses can go to hire our writers. It's a fantastic resource for anyone who really wants someone who knows what they're doing. I get no cut. It goes directly to our writers.
That's awesome. So writer.me, also unstoppable.me.me is the blog we were talking about sort of throughout in there. I'm going to link to a whole bunch of other stuff that we talked about. I'm going to try and find your coach, his website, Alex Sharfman, I believe.
Yeah. I'd be glad to introduce you to him as well, if you like.
Awesome. We mentioned Sonia Simone and we mentioned Brian Clark. They've both been on this show. I'll link to those for you in case you want to follow up and see, go further down this path and everything else. That Tim Ferriss, that needs to be out there for people more. So I'll put that there as well. John, man, I'm so glad we finally got to do this. I really, really, truly appreciate you taking the time. That's been a fascinating conversation. And I don't know, just keep doing what you're doing because it is totally awesome to watch.
Thanks, man. I love what I'm doing and I really appreciate you giving me the chance to talk about it.
All right. That was a lot of fun. And I hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed being part of it. If you are creating products and you want a deeper understanding of how John was talking about this jobs to be done, there are some amazing free resources out there on it. I believe the founders of Intercom, the software company, have written like the sort of definitive guide to it, but I will track that down and I'll link to it in the show notes for you. It is a super, super useful and interesting and It's a great concept to understand and also to sort of implement into your own life and into your own business. So I'll find that for you and I'll put it onto hacktheentrepreneur.com with John Morrow's episode there for you. Or you can just do some Google Ninja Mastery and try and find some jobs to be done, PDF or something for yourself. But it is out there and it's highly, highly recommended. I'm also going to track down a whole bunch of other stuff that John's been involved with or written because he's an amazing writer. He's got an amazing story and I just love reading his work. I've been reading it for years and years and years and years. And so I would love to be able to share that further with you if you haven't had the pleasure of reading what he does. Freshbooks.com/hack is the sponsor of the show. They have been for the past several episodes, and I do want to thank them, and I do want to encourage you. If you need help with your business, if you need help keeping track of your bookkeeping, if you need help getting paid faster in these sorts of times that we live in, then FreshBooks is what you need, and you can try it out absolutely for free. Freshbooks.com/hack, and when they ask you where you heard about it, tell them you heard it at Hack the Entrepreneur. All right, everything over on the website is there for you. We are still publishing articles regularly, and we are publishing to the podcast feed regularly as well. Our email has slowed down a little bit. We're not really sending out as many emails right at this moment because it doesn't feel totally right to me at this point. So I will be sending out some messages and some things with some maybe book recommendations and things to, if you happen to be sort of contained in your own space right now, then this might help you and help you sort of further yourself and grow throughout all of this. But otherwise, it's kind of slowed down over there, but the website is there for you. You should stop by when you have a chance. All right. Well, I hope that you are doing well. I hope that you're staying safe. And I hope that we all can just keep our heads together and get through this. And until then, keep hacking the entrepreneur.